Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
After a season unlike any other, after months long in a hiatus, nearly 3 months in the bubble itself, the NBA Finals are finally here. And if you're anything like me, there was only one thing that you wanted to say before tip-off. Actually, I was thinking, ball game.
Game on.
But Fergie will do. Game on. There you go. Finally. No, actually, I mean, like, let's do this, right? Hell yes. Let's do this. LeBron, AD, and the Caruso versus James Buckets, Bam, Goron. Let's get it on. And Miami showed up. The Heat showed the hell up. That game was tied at 10 with just over 8 minutes left in the first. And then Miami went on a run. They were doing whatever they wanted in that first quarter. Get to the bucket, sure. Hit from deep, no problem. The Lakers were a mess. Missed shots, offensive fouls, goaltending, turnovers. You named it, LA was doing it. This is why you can't sleep on the Heat, because they're always ready. They stay ready. And as always, the Heat were not there just to take part. They were there to take over. That's part of that famous Miami Heat culture, baby. And the whole country was seeing it in real time. When the run was 6-0, Frank Vogel calls timeout. But things did not get better. Butler had a layup and another bucket. And then Jay Crowder hit this to make it a 13-0 run.
Stolen by Goran Dragic. And Dragic, a 3-on-2 break. Into the corner to Butler, gets it to Crowder. Crowder, step back, wide open three. Crowder buries it from downtown. Miami up 23-10.
Heat radio, 23-10. Lakers' worst nightmare was materializing. The Heat were not intimidated. The stage was not too big. They were imposing their will on the heavily favored Lakers. They were dictating the situation. So Vogel had to burn another timeout. And Laker fan, don't you tell me that you weren't sweating it at that point. You were rattled. Your guys looked totally disjointed. And it was LeBron's scheduled time to sit. With him on the bench and a 13-point deficit, that could get out of hand quickly. That could get ugly in a hurry. Suddenly, you're down 1-0 in the series. And the coronation that you were expecting was not going to happen. So LeBron does take that seat. 23-10. About to get ugly, right? Well, let's not get into that. Because Kyle Kuzma and Rajon Rondo came into the game for LeBron and Dwight. The Heat are thinking, man, we got this. This is playing out perfectly, right? Wrong. The Lakers suddenly remembered that they were the Lakers. And apparently the Heat remembered that they were the Heat. And that they got here by beating up on a bunch of scrubs in the East. Because things changed in a hurry for L.A.
Davis, KCP top of the key.
KCP for a three.
Kuz passes on a three, gets it to KCP, who takes a three from the corner and drains it. That's a good sign for the Lakers. 25-15, Miami's lead now down to 10.
That is a good sign for the Lakers. John Ireland, KCP for three again.
KCP for another three. Good again. Back-to-back threes by Kentavious Caldwell-Pope has the Lakers within seven. So, Michael, you said get it to single digits by the end of the quarter. They didn't need that long.
Right.
25-18, Heat by seven.
All right, then. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope keeping the Lakers in it in the first quarter. Just like we all knew that he would. Because when it all hits the fan, we can all count on KCP to start hitting threes. And then it was contagious. Then everybody else started getting in on the act. The act of abusing the overmatched Heat. Alex Caruso from deep.
Rondo outside to AD. Corner to Caruso. Three-pointer by Alex is good. And the Lakers, with 4 seconds left, lead by three.
Ritt at home screaming, ball game! Kyle Kuzma from, you know it, beyond the arc.
LeBron dribbles left on Jimmy. Turns to the middle, got there, got it to Kuz in the corner for a three, and Kuzma buried it.
Great shot.
34-30, Lakers lead by four.
All of a sudden, they've got a four-point lead. What the hell happened to that vaunted Heat perimeter defense that we talked so much about yesterday? You think somebody might want to get a hand in anybody's face? Anybody's face? You know, before AD starts knocking them in from way outside?
Green fakes a three, drives on the baseline, whips it to Anthony Davis for three, and Davis hits it, and the Lakers can't miss from three. 9 of 15, 47-43, Lakers by four.
If Ritt were here, he'd say, ball game. They hit 65% of their threes in the first half. They went from down 23-10 halfway through the first quarter to up 65-48 at halftime. That's a 30-point swing. And at that point, it's not just a big run. That's the entire, well, ball game. Thanks for coming, Miami. A complete and total kick to the package for the Heat. And it would only get worse. It got so bad that the final score didn't even matter because it was not just about the threes. It was not just about the Lakers mercilessly hunting mismatches when Miami switched on pick and rolls, although that was pretty impressive. If you were wearing a Heat jersey and the Lakers didn't think much of your defense, they were going to find you and they were going to attack you every chance they got. But it was not only about that. It was not only about bombing from deep and hunting mismatches. It was about this moment in the final minute of the first half as well. A key moment. LeBron battling under the glass and then getting into a stare down with Jay Crowder.
LeBron got his own rebound, powers up inside, foul, and he'll go to the line to shoot two. And now LeBron and Crowder exchanging words. And Anthony Davis is looking at Crowder like, knock it off, man. Quit hitting my guy. Davis didn't like that. And Anthony Davis just stood there right next to Crowder in his personal space and dared him to do anything.
Well, ain't nobody going to do nothing. You think anybody's going to throw a punch and get suspended for a game or so?
No, but I think what his message was, we're not letting you push him.
No.
See, that was a moment. That was a message. That was a statement. Statement being, man, we're not punks. We're not one of those Eastern Conference weaklings that you can bully and intimidate. We're not going to back down. We're not the Pacers. We're not the Bucks. We're not the Celtics. That was LeBron saying, you know who the hell I am? And then reminding Crowder who the hell he is or isn't. That was the message. The message being, we're no one's bitch, especially yours, Miami. Ask LeBron, and LeBron will admit, sure, early on, we did taste our own blood, but that's exactly what we needed.
I don't think in the beginning that we were physical enough. You have to get a feel for how hard Miami plays. And I think, you know, they smacked us in the mouth. And, you know, from that moment when it was 23-10, we started to play to our capabilities.
Right. And then it would still get worse for Miami. I mean, forget for a moment that we officially had garbage time in the third quarter of a finals game. And by the fourth quarter, the announcing crew was just telling random stories about Kareem Abdul-Jabbar playing for Pat Riley. If that game had gone on any longer, Mike Breen would have ripped open a dictionary and just read from that. I'm glad it didn't go any longer because it was already way too long. If that game had gone any longer, Miami wouldn't have had anybody left to play. They would have put assistant coach Chris Quinn into the game to run that point. Then there was the Dragic injury.
He is doubtful to return, Mike.
That's a huge blow for them. It's Caldwell Pope misses but gets fouled on the three-point attempt. Dragic averaging just under 21 per game. He's been their leading scorer in the playoffs. He's just been marvelous. Here's the play right there, that second step with the foot. And Eric Spoelstra right now playing without him. So Kendrick Nunn, the rookie, has checked in for him.
ESPN. Uh-oh to that. Uh-oh to this. Buckets got dinged.
Butler goes in. Butler slips on the deck. Oh, and he tweaked his left ankle, and he is down. A 5-on-4 break now. Caruso alone under the basket. Anthony Davis. We still have seen no sign of Jimmy Butler, and Butler right now on a sprained left ankle, it looks like. And Totter's going to take a timeout.
I love
Jimmy
how they
Butler
can diagnose that injury mid-play.
Walking gingerly on that left foot.
Heat radio.
So that is not good news for
Miami.
Yeah,
thank you. Then the biggest uh-oh of all. Bam, getting dinged.
LeBron to Howard into Davis, an easy two-hand jam. 28 points for him now. LeBron's going to have a triple-double coming up here shortly. And looks like Bam has injured his arm or wrist yet again. And Miami's going to have to take a timeout here. And the Heat right now, not a single thing is going right for Miami.
Pretty much. I mean, losing the first game of the finals is one thing. Having your three most important players injured in game one of the finals is another. Butler did continue to play last night. According to reports, though, Bam will play in game two. But according to Woj, Dragic suffered a plantar tear in his left foot, which sucks. Sucks for him. He works his ass off. He gets to the finals. And then it has to go like that. And obviously it sucks for Miami and for the fans, because after everything that has happened over the course of this season, more than anything else, what we wanted, what we needed was a competitive finals. Everybody wants that. Nobody wants to see LeBron and Anthony Davis bullying Solomon Hill and Kelly Olynyk on their way to a sweep. And no, I'm not going to expect the Lakers to keep shooting 65% from three. Not for a whole game, not for another half. Nobody should. That was crazy. That's something of an outlier. And if it weren't for the injuries, the Heat could just take that game, throw it in the trash, and come right back in game two. And Laker fan, don't you come in here and tell me you knew they were going to blow Miami out all along. You didn't know that. Nobody did. And you especially didn't know that when you were down 13 early on. Don't tell me you weren't sweating that. Are you craving some protein after a good workout? Do not make a shake. Do not reach for a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty, it's tender. It's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. And it goes wherever you go, to the game, to the gym, to the beach. Look for Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it. Ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? DeForest Buckner is my guest. DeForest, it's good to have you on. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well.
Good, good. Good to have you back. Thanks so much. Listen, before we get to the Bears and this season or this weekend, take me back to Sunday. You were facing the Jets, and on that opening drive of the game, Sam Darnold throws a pick. Xavier Rhodes gets it. But during that return, you had this great block around the 25-yard line. Rhodes scores. Can you take me through the play? What did you see, and then how happy were you with your blocking performance?
So, we're rushing in, and I turn around, and as, you know, Sam releases the ball and I see Xavier, catch it. And, you know, we've been preaching about takeaways and how, you know, from defense you turn into the offense. So you have to find somebody to go block. So we preach about taking it up the near sideline. I turn around and I see the first guy that I see. And, when we've been talking about, using force of hands and not, getting any penalties. So I just, just got my body in position in a way. You know, I was trying to just slow him down, and guy hit me. I kind of trip over Xavier as he passes me, and he scores. So it was just something that we practice, every time we get the ball or a turnover in practice. So it was just a great play.
It was. DeForest Buckner joining us. I'm looking at that defense. That is an aggressive defense. That is an opportunistic defense. And it comes on the heels of a huge game from you and the entire D in the win over the Vikings. You had a sack and a half and a safety against Minnesota. And then Justin Houston had that safety against the Jets. Overall, what's it feel like when this defense, this unit, really starts to roll the way it is?
Yeah. We, on paper, we have a lot of talent, great players on defense. And, it started with the offseason, not being able to be together, but, started with training camp. And, we know we have the pieces. We just got to put it together. And, each week we preach on, we need to get better. Just everybody doing their job and, holding each other accountable and just playing hard. And so when everybody knows their assignments and playing hard, there's, the outcome is great. So we just need to continue to stack those, stack the days and, stack wins.
DeForest Buckner joining us. Listen, one more thought about this. I know you're a team guy. You're not looking to make it about yourself, but there's this play, this amazing play that I want to ask you about in the Vikings game. You knocked over Minnesota offensive lineman Drew Samia with one arm on your way to the quarterback. I could explain this, but I can't even do it justice. People have to find this. You sent a 300-pound man flying. How satisfying is it when you can completely overwhelm the man in front of you and then get to the quarterback?
Individually, it's very satisfying, being able to, and those are certain things you're going to need to set up throughout the game. And, I haven't really hit him with an inside move, and, I knew he was going to set out outside on me. So I was going to sell him upfield, and, I was going to, counter back inside, and I did my counter and gave it everything I got. And his momentum kind of took him with him. So it was really satisfying. As soon as, I cleared him, I just saw a clear path to the quarterback, and, I was just, running as hard as I could to get to the quarterback.
DeForest Buckner joining us. Listen, you mentioned what the offseason was like and how unusual it was. I'm curious, what's it been like to come to a new team during an offseason that is that unusual? How did you go about making connections and starting to build relationships with your teammates?
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting time being traded, during the whole COVID situation. I didn't really have that, the OTAs, to really meet the guys in person and then everything. And but you know, as I got traded, some guys reached out to me, texted me, and you know, and the coaches. And so throughout OTAs, I mean, we just been, you know, on the Zoom meetings. You know, that's how I really spoke to the guys. And you know, as we got out here, you know, just continuing those that communication with some of the guys. And you know, I transferred to training camp. I mean, it made it a little easier for me, you know, knowing certain guys and talking to them a little bit over the phone and all that. So, I mean, it was very interesting, but I mean, you know, I'm a team guy and I like being able to, you know, work with my teammates and everything. You know, when you have a good relationship, you know, off the field, it makes it even better on the field.
We're talking to Colt DeForest Buckner. You know, Frank Reich tells the story that when GM Chris Ballard mentioned that they might have a chance to make a deal for you, the coach was fired up. He immediately went to watch film of your performance in the Super Bowl, which he described as, quote, dominant and, quote, a monster performance on a big stage. He then added, quote, that's a trait that I think special guys have, end of quote. Like, DeForest, it seems to me, I've done this a long time, and literally every great athlete that I know or have ever spoken to, they always want to measure themselves on the biggest stage against the very best. Like, so how did you approach that? Did you approach that as just that, this is the big stage, I have to dial it up, or did you try and treat it like every other game?
Yeah, personally, I try to treat it like every other game. You know, you can't make it bigger than it is. I mean, it's, at the end of the day, it's another game, you know, and you can't, you know, put that extra pressure on yourself to be like, oh, man, this is the biggest game of my career. You know, I got to do something different. No, you just have to be yourself. And, I mean, all the preparation that you've done up to that moment, you just have to trust yourself and your preparation going into the game. And that's kind of how I approached it. You know, like it was just another game. And, you know, I didn't make it bigger than it was. And, you know, I was able to have success, you know, personally. But, I mean, it wasn't good enough, you know, to seal the deal. So, I mean, it's definitely a game that I'll always remember, and you know, I have that fire in me to get back there one day.
We're talking to DeForest Buckner. You know, I mentioned some of your accomplishments off the very top. Overall, and again, I stress, you are a team guy, but overall, do you feel like you get the respect that you deserve around the NFL, or do you feel like there's still some folks that are sleeping on you?
No, I mean, last year my peers were, you know, they've seen what I was capable of doing, and they voted me into the top, you know, the list of the top 100, which I really appreciated. I mean, I feel like I'm starting to get my name out there a little bit, but I mean, personally, I'm never satisfied. I'm always, you know, hungry to gain respect. That's the biggest thing in this game, and that's all I want playing it. And so I just, you know, I strive to continue to, you know, get the respect of my peers.
All right, so it was a big offseason, and not just because of the move to Indy. You also celebrated the arrival of one Dominic George Buckner back in April. How is he doing, and how is fatherhood treating you?
Yeah, I love it, man. It's definitely the best thing that's ever happened to me. The little man's getting—he's getting big, fast, and getting strong, man. So it's definitely a blessing. Going home. I mean, you don't ever have any bad days. You know, even if you do have a bad day, you go home, and I mean, I just see that face, and it just brings joy to me. So, everything I do, I mean, he's my why. So, it's just been awesome.
Dude, that's so important, right? Like, I don't want to gloss over that. You said he's my why. How important is it to you to have a why, or really for any of us to have a why and know exactly what it is?
Yeah, it's just to have, you know, something to work for. You know, I work for him. You know, and everything I do, I could be working out, or, you know, I could be struggling throughout practice or a game or anything. And I just think of him, you know, I just want to do everything that I do is for him. And so I just want to make, you know, I want him to be proud of me and my accomplishment, what I've done, and also, you know, do things to make his life better. So, he's my why and why I do the things I do.
Excellent. Last thought, you've got Nick Foles and the Bears on Sunday. How does Foles make the offense different, and what's the key to stopping him?
Yeah, I mean, he's a great pocket quarterback. You know, he's really efficient with his passes. I mean, he hangs in there, and he'll take the hits to complete the passes. I mean, he trusts his receivers. So, as a unit, we just got to do a really good job with rushing up front and applying pressure when needed, and, you know, kind of make him uncomfortable in that pocket. You know, so the back end, you know, they don't need to hold up in coverage too long, and, you know, they can play more aggressive and be able to, you know, get a couple more picks.
Colts look great, especially defensively. He's an all-pro. He's a pro bowler, having another big season already. Indianapolis 2-1, and they are at Chicago on Sunday, and that is a CBS game. DeForest Buckner, my guest. DeForest, great to have you back. Always good to have you on the show. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me again. Go Colts.
All right, so MLB Sweet 16. really kicked into action yesterday. We had 8 games. Here is a quick summary for you. The Twins are done. They lost again. That is their 18th straight. 18th straight postseason loss. Nothing but respect to you, GOATs. You guys are the best. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
18 and counting. The Rays finished off the Jays. New York beat Cleveland 10-9 in the longest 9-inning game in MLB history. That game was so long, they started playing it in September, and it finally ended in October. Somebody had to win, and the Yanks did, and they won it on this.
Breaking ball is grounded up the middle. Base hit! Center field! Urshela coming home. He will score! It's a 0-2 base hit by LeMahieu to center field. And the Yankees take a 10-9 lead.
Yankees radio. So now Tampa Bay and New York are going to play each other in San Diego. That's a sentence I never thought that I would say. But 2020 is full of firsts. And given the disdain between those two teams and the fact that Tampa Bay has, quote, a whole bleeping stable of guys that throw 98, this should get really nice, really fast. And speaking of San Diego, Padre fan, how you feeling? How you feeling this morning? Because that did not go according to plan yesterday. I understand you're missing your number one. I understand you're missing your number two. But when you make your return to the postseason after being away that long, you do not want this to happen with one man on in the very first inning.
Goldschmidt comes to the plate. This is the real threat in the Cardinals' batting order.
You think?
It's amazing he's put up the numbers he has this season, considering the fact the opponents haven't had to pitch to him. They pitch to him here, and he drives it deep to left field, and it is gone. Goldschmidt, one swing, puts the Cardinals on top.
Sorry about that.
Challenge
spoiler
that guy.
Alert.
They don't
and
have
the
anybody to protect.
But I was watching the monitor on CBS Sports Network. I'm sorry I'm stepping all over ESPN's broadcast. Uh-oh, that'll leave a mark, a big mark, because the Cards were not done. That home run was followed by a double, an RBI single, another double, and then a sac fly. When it was all over, it was already 4-0 Cards. Chris Paddock got the start for the Padres, and to say that it did not go well would be an understatement. In fact, it went pretty horribly. 8 hits, 6 runs, he did not even make it out of the third. Again, nobody was expecting this guy to be a horse or an ace. Well, except for Paddock, he for some reason thought that he actually did pretty well. Quote, I noticed early that they were jumping on my fastball. I thought we did an awesome job of executing our pitches. I guess that's postseason baseball. I take all the blame for game one. The game speeds up in a postseason start. Every pitch, I was mentally fatigued because I knew every pitch was important. End quote. That's a pretty interesting statement. Pretty intriguing quote, especially that part where he said, quote, I thought we did an awesome job of executing our pitches, end quote. My man, you just allowed 8 hits and 6 runs in 2 1/3 innings. And that's, quote, an awesome job of executing our pitches. I mean, like, I love a positive attitude, but if leaving the game with an ERA over 23 is awesome, what would you consider crappy? An ERA of 46? 92? Or maybe I'm the one who doesn't get it. Maybe I have it all twisted. Maybe I've got this all wrong. Maybe when you say that you did an awesome job of executing, maybe I missed where you were going. I mean, do you mean an awesome job of locating? Because I'll give you that. You did do an awesome job of locating. Locating the barrel of every one of their bats. If that's your point, then you're right. I would agree. You executed flawlessly. If the goal was to make sure that the Cardinals squared up absolutely everything they saw from you, then yes, your execution was perfect. Listen, I'm not even here to dump on the Padres. You know that. I'm just saying that was a really bad time to have a really bad day. But you've got a chance today to win and keep your season alive.
Slam Diego!
Now, if you want to see how it's done in the postseason, if you want to see some postseason experts, you need to take the 5 North to L.A. because the Dodgers showed everybody exactly how it's done. And they showed you how talented they are. Take Mookie Betts playing in his first postseason game for L.A. Led off the bottom of the first with a double. Then the Dodgers followed that with a walk, a pop out, a walk, then an RBI walk, then a flyout, then another RBI walk. So I'm talking about a team that had two runs in the first off walks. You take that many pitches with the bases loaded in the postseason, that is some serious patience. These are guys coming to the plate with a great scouting report and a great plan and a great approach. And you've got some serious issues for Brewers pitcher Brent Suter. Four walks in the first inning, tied an MLB record. And unlike the Padres, I'm not so sure that he was doing an awesome job of executing his pitches, unless he was looking to locate his outside the strike zone. You had Chris Taylor lead off the second with a double, and then Betts. The guy they brought in for moments like this did this.
Mookie doubled to right in the first inning. And there's a line drive into center field for a base hit. Taylor will score easily. And on his way to second base with a head-first sliding double, Mookie Betts. He's 2 for 2 with a pair of doubles, and the Dodgers take a 3-0 lead.
Dodgers radio, 3-0. At that point, it looked like the route was on. At that point, if the Dodgers went on to win that game 12-0, I would not have been surprised. It's not what happened, though. Like, their bats went quiet. They had to fight for everything. They had to scratch. They had to claw. But here's my thing about the Dodgers. This is a night where they had 6 hits, and they still won. A night where they had 6 hits, and they scored 4 runs. A game where they went 1 for 7 with runners in scoring position in the first 2 innings, and they still won. Walker Buehler was fighting blisters and only lasted 4 innings. If you had told the Brewers before that game that LA would get 6 hits and that their ace would leave after 4, I'm pretty sure that Milwaukee would have taken that. If you're going to get LA and you're going to get LA in a short series, man, that's the day to do it. And they still couldn't capitalize. They still couldn't take advantage because the Dodgers are that good. Because they got it to their bullpen, and the bullpen is that good. That's the problem with facing the Dodgers. You got to keep their bats quiet, and even then, that's not enough. You got to get their bats quiet, keep them quiet, get their ace out of there, and they still couldn't beat them. What I'm saying is, this is the best Dodger team I've seen in quite some time, and they are the ones to beat, for sure. Did you know that a fire department responds to a fire every 24 seconds? October is Fire Prevention Month, and it is right around the corner. And we have teamed up with First Alert. It is the most trusted brand in fire safety to help you get ready for the unexpected and review some key safety tips. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms help provide an early warning in the event of a home emergency. Having enough First Alert smoke and carbon monoxide alarms is one of the best things that you can do for your home and your family. You want to make sure to install alarms on every level and in every bedroom of your home. Once the alarms are installed, it's also important to maintain them by testing them with regularity. Also, remember, the alarms do not last forever. They need to be replaced at least every 10 years. If you can't remember the last time that you replaced your alarm, it is best to replace that unit completely. As an option for replacement, my favorite is First Alert's combination smoke and carbon monoxide alarm with a 10-year sealed battery. The alarm features 2-in-1 protection against smoke and carbon monoxide, that goes without saying, and I don't have to change that battery for a decade. Lastly, take this time and discuss home safety with your family. Plan and practice an escape route, and remember to practice it at least twice a year. For more information on fire safety products, safety tips, and educational activities that you can do at home with your family, visit firstalert.com/fireprevention month. Again, firstalert.com/fireprevention month. Sam Amick is my guest. Sam, are you kicking it poolside?
Romy, what's up, my guy? I'm not poolside today. We're getting the job done. Practice is coming up quickly, so I'm about to jump on a little shuttle bus here in a few minutes and go check in with the Heat first, see how they're feeling, and then Lakers after that.
We're talking about practice, Sam? Practice? All right, so really quickly, you talked about the Heat and how they might be feeling. They jumped out to a 13-point lead in the first quarter. At that point, what kind of thoughts were you having last night?
So it's funny, I was a little bit guilty of, you know, you're watching the game and you can't ever not watch the game with the seats as good as they are here for the media. So I'm about 10 feet away from the court, I'm across from the Heat bench, and, you know, you certainly get your attention, but I was kind of just getting into the game and you look up and it's
like, my gosh, it's 25-12, and they're on their way. I even tweeted something about just, you know, the early hot start, and then it just fell apart. So it's funny. I got a text from my good friend and Lakers beat writer, Bill Oram, during that time, and Bill was just like, you know, that's the first time he had thought about how maybe the Lakers could lose. Who knows, you know, and it was a hell of a start for Miami, but obviously didn't last very long.
No, it did not. Sam Amick joining us. So they come out of that timeout after they fell behind by 13, and then that thing flipped. Obviously, the injuries to Miami were a big part of this, but what about, Sam, L.A.'s size? How much is L.A.'s size bothering Miami?
I think it's a major, major problem for the Heat. And also, it's the size combined with we might have been, you know, kind of sleeping on the experience factor, because if you look at an AD, you know, a guy, okay, he's never been to the finals, but he's significantly older than Bam Adebayo and has more playoff experience. You know, certainly that's the case for Dwight Howard, JaVale McGee. And the size combined with the experience against the Heat, I think, is a problem. And Bam was having a hard time, got in foul trouble. Obviously, injuries like crazy. But the bodies the Lakers can throw at the Heat, not only with, you know, Bam and on the bigs, but it's with Jimmy Butler and the wing perimeter defenders that the Lakers have too. And whether it's LeBron deciding he's going to jump on Jimmy, which did happen, you know, or a Danny Green or a KCP, you know, they have options. And obviously in game one, it was incredibly one-sided.
We're talking to Sam Amick. Now, if Goran Dragic has got that plantar tear and Bam's got a shoulder strain and Jimmy Butler's got that sprained ankle, did that series officially end before the first game ended?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's how it felt last night. And we'll see. You know what I mean? Like, these playoffs have had all sorts of moments where you thought you had a series pegged and it went the other way. But, I mean, you know, yeah, I went in, I think I predicted Lakers in seven. I was giving the Heat all kinds of love. And I know what got my attention a little bit is the analytics community loved the Heat. And, you know, and I always try to pay attention to that a little bit. So, but it just looked like, I don't know how the Heat solved this. It looked like, you know, two teams on very different levels. And then the injuries, Jimmy's fantastic. He's had an incredible run leading this team to this final stage. But, you know, he's – I don't even know if even LeBron himself, if he was on the other team, could pull off this kind of a thing with your guys down like the Heat guys might be. Now, it sounds like Goran is feeling a little bit better today, and maybe he can get back in this series. You know, that would be big, because without him, I mean, that's their leading scorer and a guy who's incredibly important.
Sam Amick, senior NBA writer for The Athletic, is joining us. Sam, you had Jeannie Buss on the Tampering podcast earlier this week. I want to get into some of the details, but overall, the last year and a half has been an absolute roller coaster. What did she make of everything that has happened in the past 18 months?
I mean, it's tough to even describe what she made of it all, because, you know, as you know, Jim, so much of it was, like I wrote, it was joy, sadness, everything in between. She still, if I'm being honest, is somebody who's known her for quite a while now. You can tell that she's still hurting, still processing, still grieving when it comes to Kobe, when it comes to her mother passing away, David Stern passing away. You know, then you have the other stressful situations, the China, Hong Kong situation in last October, where the Lakers obviously were playing those preseason games. We're in the middle of that kind of geopolitical storm. You've got the work stoppage because of the virus and this team with a guy in LeBron, you know, at the tail end of his career with a lot on the line basketball-wise and then trying to get this thing over the finish line. But, I mean, she seemed like she was in a pretty good place. Certainly she was enjoying, you know, her beloved franchise getting back here for the first time in a decade. And, you know, it seems like they've figured a lot of things out. They've had issues galore the last couple of years. We talked at length, as you know, about their front office dysfunction and how some of that appears to have been improved. You know, the backstory and history with her brother, Jim Buss, and that tough decision to part ways with him, bring in Magic. The Magic thing falls apart. I mean, the twists and turns in the past 18 months, going back to April 2019, it's just wild to me that they found a way to get from there to here.
We're talking to Sam Amick. I was going to ask you about that, Sam, but you just touched on that. It's amazing, right? When you go back to last April and all the things that happened to that franchise and the fact that they were able to turn it all around and they're right here really is amazing. I would say to you, how could they do that? Part of that, of course, is a healthy LeBron. Danny Green had this great comment, quote, this guy's the greatest player in the GD world, end of quote. Like, how would you describe where LeBron is right now with his game, with his life, really his entire journey?
No, he's in a fantastic place. And what's counterintuitive about this playoff run for him is he's had some magical nights, but, you know, the consistency has not always been there. And for him, the bar is so high that he still puts together an incredible line. But, man, in game five against Denver, he reminded us of who he is as a player, and he was just dominant. And the Nuggets just had nothing when it comes to countering that kind of force and that kind of competition. As a person, he seems to be in a very good place. He's, you know, in this bubble environment where mental health has been a topic, has been an issue, it seems, you know, only he truly knows, but it seems like he's really kind of sailed through it. His wife, Savannah, came out for a while, but, you know, he's dealing with his own kind of being apart from the kids and being focused on the game. But it seems like he just locked in and decided, I think, because he knows what's at stake and he knows these opportunities, you know, are to be cherished, that was what he needed to do. And the job's not done yet, but he's done it. And not only for himself, but, I mean, his leadership on this Lakers team has been impressive. You know, the way that he moves with Anthony Davis, the relationship that they have built that is very different from a Kyrie Irving relationship, even different from a D-Wade dynamic. You know, his brother that obviously he's incredibly close with. This AD thing is a big brother, little brother thing that has been at the center of their success.
So, Sam, if he finishes this, what would another NBA championship mean to LeBron, and what would it mean in the overall picture of his career?
I think it's significant. You know, we thought once he won in Cleveland that it was kind of that mic drop of there's nothing else he needed to do. Now, sure, if you want to get into the greatest of all time debate, you want to talk about Michael, you can keep talking about the nuance of that short list conversation. But this one, if you talk about winning a championship with a third franchise, but more importantly, and you've been West Coast based for so long, you know this better than anybody, like, the narrative for his whole career was that he was skating by in the East. And, you know, oh, if he came West, he'd get smacked around a little bit. And, I mean, it took him 2 years. You know, one bad year, and then here he is at the top of the Western Conference and, you know, looking like he's going to be able to get another trophy, another ring. I think it would be big. You know, four obviously is a significant number when it comes to championships. But, you know, the 10 finals thing that gets him into extremely rarefied air in terms of players who have been to 10 finals. He just continues to elevate that resume.
Sam Amick, my guest. Really quickly, Sam, before you jump on that bus, because you brought it up, like, where do you come out on that greatest of all time debate?
You know, honestly, Romy, like, I don't know if it's a product of being a kid of the 80s. I have a hard time cutting through, you know, the Michael dominance and the perfection of Michael's championship resume. It's, you know, and that it's not as simple as 6-0, because for one, again, I just mentioned LeBron getting there 10 times. That is definitely worth something. But, you know, I think it's a Michael LeBron, you know, discussion. I think that it's something that we're going to keep talking about. But I don't know. You can never win in that chat. And he's in the conversation, and it's a legitimate thing. A couple years ago, it felt like it was forced. It felt like, you know, TV producers were trying to create content by kind of inserting him into the conversation. But, you know, he's very much in it.
How bad do you have to be at football to be an underdog to the Jets? What has had to happen in your season that the odds makers have the New York Jets as a betting favorite over your team tonight? And yes, it is a real thing. It's not a joke I'm setting up. There is no punchline. The Jets are actually, something Logan would say, my younger son, actually, I like it when it actually can be a question or a statement of fact. Like, actually, well, no, the Jets are actually a 1-point favorite when they host Denver tonight on Thursday Night Football. I mean, honestly, I could not believe my gazes when I woke up this morning and I saw it. I was like, I mean, this can't be real, right? Speaking of the big head, I actually had to text him to see if he saw the same thing because he's up early. And I know he looks for that sort of thing. I literally cannot remember a betting line that I was so shocked about. And I mean ever. The J-E-T-S, Jets, are actually favored to win a football game in 2020. Got to be kidding me with that. This is the same team who just lost by 29 points to the Colts, right? The same team that got pick sixed twice in that game, right? The same Jets team that I've watched this season that cannot throw the football, cannot run the football, cannot block, cannot cover, cannot tackle. That team, these guys, they're favored against another NFL team in primetime. How? They're arguably not only the worst team in all of football, they might be the worst Jets team ever. And you know that's saying something. So how the hell did we get here? Especially given the Broncos having some modicum of talent. And yes, I believe that's the first time I've ever used that word on this show. But how did we get here? I'll tell you how. Injuries. Injuries. There are injury issues. And then there's your 2020 Denver Broncos. And nobody wants to hear about the injuries. Nobody wants to use that as an excuse. But if you're an underdog against the Jets, you're probably banged the hell up. Check this injury report for the Broncos this year. Von Miller, the team's best player, IR. A.J. Boye, the team's best cornerback, IR. Cortland Sutton, the team's best wideout, IR. Mark Barron, IR. This week, Jarrell Casey and their starting right tackle, Elijah Wilkinson, also placed on IR. The Broncos have about $62.5 million on their injured reserve list right now. And they don't have their quarterback, Drew Lock, which has led to some pretty horrible backup play. He's been out since week one. Philip Lindsay may play, but he's also been banged up. So the Broncos are going to be missing a minimum of a half a dozen starting players tonight. They are so beaten up. They're so banged up that their head coach does not even know who he's got left on his own roster. Like, the guy literally thinks that he's running Mark Rippon out at quarterback tonight.
Now we're going to start Mark. I mean, Brett. I keep calling him Mark at times because of his uncle.
We're going to start Mark. Jay Schrader. We have a lot of confidence in Doug Williams. Sonny Jurgensen's been getting all the first team reps. Billy Kilmer throws a really nice ball.
We're going to start Mark. Brett.
Just kidding, Victor. Look, I know Rippon is starting because there's no way you're going to put a guy named Jeff Driscoll under center. Right? I wonder if Virgil even knows who Driscoll is or that he's on their payroll. Actually, now that I'm talking about this out loud, I can see why all those reports about Adam Gase and his job might be at stake tonight. Never mind again that the owner was calling him a, quote, brilliant offensive mind like 2.5 weeks ago. There is the thought and the speculation that even though the offseason's so jacked up and we're in the midst of a pandemic, that if they get blown out again tonight, that might be the end of Adam Gase. You better win this one, eyes. You have to beat this team. You know why? Because, one, you're 0-3. You've been blown out in every single game. You're not competitive at all. But that aside, you will never, ever, ever be favored to beat anyone else ever again unless they allow you to start scheduling Division III programs in college football. So, yeah, old crazy eyes. You're on the hottest of hot seats right now. Can you imagine how jacked up those peepers are going to look tonight with the amount of heat that this guy's got on his backside? I'm talking popping, yo.
Yo.
The late, great Rashay Caldwell will be watching from up above, I'm sure. I'm still kind of shocked the Jets, though, are favorites. Honestly, I don't know how or if I would participate in something like that. I don't know how I would partake. Maybe that's why I got down. James Kelly got down on some baseball this morning because there's no way you want to find a way or figure out a way to get involved in tonight's game. The Jets are favored, but there's a reason why they're favored. I don't know. I don't know that. I don't know what I'm going to do with that game tonight. I know this. I know that if they didn't pay me, there's no way in hell I'd watch that game tonight. But I also know one more thing. Eyes. I'm sure about this. You better win this game, Eyes. Coach them up, Eyes. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets minus one. Never thought that I would say that. Everybody, all at once. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets, Jets minus one. Are you kidding me about that? Let's go to Matt in L.A. Get him in before the break. What's up, Matt?
That's the Mac. Hey, like two hands on a double D rack. Your boy Matt in L.A. is feeling it. What's poppin', pimp? From Figueroa to Laurel Canyon. From Ventura to Baja, California, you're welcome. In 2020, the year of Kobe Bean Bryant. The year of the Dove Double, do not attempt to adjust your radio dial. Because even if you change your TV channel from the CBS Sports Net worldwide, L.A. is taking over this mother scratcher. The Lakers brought a nice, swift ass kicking in game one and looked...
That's not a good call.
Matt.
No. You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a
Matt.
Very good call.
It took a minute to sink in. And I didn't pick up on it right away. Like, I was, no offense, I was kind of half listening and half thinking about something I had to do. That'll happen to a host once in a while. Did you start that call by saying it's like having two hands on a double D rack? Brad in Corona. Brad, what's going on?
Timmy Crack Corn Cob Pipe Rome. Thank you for the fine. Like having one hand on my trouser snake and the other one on my plumbing snake. You're about to see all kinds of nuts and corn and possibly a hair clog come up out this bitch from your boy B.I.C. Jimmy, unfortunately, the only double D's Matt in L.A. has ever had his hands on were his own big old flabby Dodger-loving boobies, Jim.
That's not a good call.
No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Bradley.
Good night now.